Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guests are Anne-Marie Cummings and Brenda Albach. Cummings and Albach have collaborated with a team of people on a short film about bullying. It's called Easy Prey, and it was created in conjunction with the Reader's Theater of Ithaca and Pacers National Bullying Prevention Center. It will be shown in various venues around our region, including at Cinemopolis on October 1st at 7 p.m. And Anne-Marie Cummings is a writer, director, and actor. She is founder and artistic director of the Reader's Theater of Ithaca and is a graduate of the Conservatory Drama Program at Carnegie Mellon University and of Oxford, England's British American Drama Academy. She co-wrote, filmed, and directed the film Easy Prey. And Brenda Albach is the director of a state facility for juvenile delinquent boys and for the last 20 years has performed in various community theaters. She is one of the actors featured in Easy Prey. And welcome to the show to you both.
Thank you for having us.
Now, I want to begin by asking you, Anne-Marie, what was it that prompted you to make a film about bullying?
Well, you know, after Columbine, I got very interested in the subject. I read a lot of articles that, you know, I was fascinated that people were trying to explain the psychology behind these young men that were acting out in such violent ways. And I thought that everyone was bringing up interesting points, but no one was really sure of anything. And I think that so that prompted me to do a column in the Ithaca Journal, Instant Message, which I interviewed youth and teens and then later young adults in their early 20s. And that ran for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. But I kept learning more and more about young people. And to no surprise, I interviewed a lot of young people who were admitting that they were bullies.
And that changed their behavior in some way, of course.
That's right. Yeah. And then a lot of young people who were also talking about being bullied. Mm-hmm. And of course, over the last decade or so, we've seen more issues come up.
Oh,
and
tons
in fact,
of them.
When we filmed this, there were all these, I think it was a whole week over the summer, that there was one school shooting right after another.
Oh, I know. It's just been continuous. It's been Sandy Hook, Virginia Tech. I mean, we could name dozens of them. I want to ask you, though, you're a playwright. Why did you decide to do a film instead of a play? Seems like a play would be more portable in some ways.
Yes and no. I mean, I've been in the theater for 25 years or so, and the more that I am exploring the art as a director, I find that there are times when stage productions work very well, but the intimacy with a camera really helps, I think, viewers go deeper on a deeper level.
More intimate experience. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I was wondering why you did that. So let's set up the film. 6 monologues based around, you know, it focuses this teen named Josh, mm-hmm. who ends up killing a schoolmate and committing suicide.
Yes.
So talk to us a little bit about these characters. Are they composites? Did you do research?
Very interesting process and an unusual one. I reached out to Evan Stewart Eisenberg and Effie Johnson, who I've worked with, their actors in the community, and both of them are writers, and I knew that. And so I reached out to them and I said, you know, why don't we create something? I don't know what it's going to be. And they both wrote monologues to do with bullying.
Right, right.
Because, you know, that is the Reader's Theater's cause. And so they wrote these monologues. I wrote one. And then I said, I think we can do something with this. We'll make a short film. And I was thinking initially 10 minutes. But then the more I got into it, I said, wait a minute. And this just happens to me. I like something so much, I want to keep going with it. I said, we need more characters, and we need to bring this, instead of 3 separate stories, let's make it all into one.
Yeah, it's a very interesting film, I must say. And it's good that you brought in more characters, because it brings in an entire community that was affected by this.
That's right. And I think that is ultimately what I wanted to show with this. It doesn't land just with the parents. It doesn't land just with the person that, you know, killed somebody.
Yeah.
It affects everyone. I mean, look how it's affecting me. And I'm not even, I've never even, I didn't have any connection to Columbine. And here I am. Imagine all the people.
You know, Dave Cullen's book about Columbine called Columbine is one of the best that I've ever read. He was on the show. And he talks about how it has affected the whole country. You know, he starts with the intimate family.
Yeah.
Brenda, I want to ask you, why did you get involved in this? And let's talk a little bit about how you prepared for this character. You play the teacher.
Right. I played the part of Paula. I remember getting an email, and it was a notice about at some point there would be some auditions for this film. And then I think it had been put on hold or something. I don't know what happened. But then there were auditions for the Reader's Theater, so I went to that. And then Anne-Marie had contacted me afterwards and had asked me if I was interested in reading for this film. I, like, immediately was tickled pink. That's exactly what I had gone for the auditions for to begin with. I wanted a part in this film.
Ah, so you want to do socially conscious.
I don't know. There was something about this anti-bullying theme that hit me. And not that I had any experience with any kind of shootings at school or what have you.
But you do work with delinquent boys, right?
But I work with delinquent boys. I have for almost 30 years. And I felt like this was a way for me to contribute back to the community by doing something that perhaps others could benefit from, whether it be, you know, other kids or parents or professionals. And so this was my way of leaving some bit of a mark.
Yeah.
It's difficult in my work to do that.
Oh, I'll bet it. I'll bet it is. I want to have you both talk about this. How did you prepare for this, and how do you as a director get people ready to play roles like this?
Well, I do want to just add something that I had no idea that she was involved for 30 years, that she had been working with young
people.
That
was one of her professions,
I don't know where that came from, but it was a perfect match. So learning that after, I think, our first rehearsal was very powerful. And when I worked with the actors for this, I worked with them separately.
Ah.
I wanted to create a certain closeness and intimacy in the setting, and also trust with the actors. I wanted to allow them to explore a little bit at first, that we didn't have answers per se, that we were just reading the material, exploring. I did ask them to be off book early on so that I could...
They had to memorize the script.
It's a film, so they need to be off book. And I think that as we went along, it just started to sink in. As a theater director and then now working more in film, I think that false notes can be detected very quickly.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I really strive to, you know, in theater, it can be a little bit more dramatic, but I don't like false notes. I really kept reiterating, keep it real, know, and that's also...
And it worked. These monologues are great. I was really impressed by the acting, I must say.
I really am. Yeah, I mean, I was impressed too. I was very pleased that everyone was able to connect so well, but I also think that I cast it well. I mean, I cast people who really
related. And people that you could obviously work with, because these are emotional subjects. How did you prepare for this? Did you read about bullying and in schools?
I did. Prior to my working in facilities with juveniles, I was a teacher, so there was a bit of a connection there. Anne-Marie had one time suggested, look on some YouTube videos and see some of the reactions of other folks that have experienced school shootings. And that helped a little bit. I read up a little bit on it. And I don't know, every time I read the monologue, it always seemed to bring me to tears. It was just really easy to get in the moment.
Yeah, I can see that in the film, too.
And it I don't know, it was just there. I was present, you know. I felt like I was that teacher, and I felt like I had been exposed to that shooting. And yeah, so it was just remarkably
And, you know, unfortunately,
simple.
In this culture, we have experienced so many of these. We've seen people on TV. We've seen the emotions coming out on the nightly news.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
Right.
Tell me about the takes. Did it take a lot of takes to get these performances?
Yeah.
Were there emotional moments when you had to stop?
And that's a good question. I think with Brenda, it felt, you know, first of all, I will say that when we rehearsed, I always used the camera. So that they could get used to the camera being part of our process and a part of the end result. And I think that that created a comfort level right away. And also, it's a very intimate, you know, the camera.
It is.
I think the most was maybe we did, with you, Brenda, maybe 8 takes, mm-hmm. 8 or 9. And then that was the way it was for everyone, with the exception of Cole Long, who was playing Josh. But it was not because of him. It was actually... in the process, after everything was shot, I went back and I was working with Marilyn Rivchin, who edited it. And I realized, the actor playing the bully, Cole Long, that I had directed him in a way that I wanted it to shift once I saw the whole thing put together.
I see.
And there was no way I could really make that call until I saw it all together. And I'm glad I did. I mean, he and I ended up reshooting, and I took him in a completely different direction. So, but still, I think it was about 10 takes for everybody.
Wow. God, that's amazing. Now, what was the process with the script, though? The three of you wrote this.
Right.
And did you have the final word?
I made it clear to them that I would be the lead writer. And I made that decision not because I didn't trust them, but because time.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, Evan was actually working on opening his cafe around that time. And Effie is a mom. And so... it's difficult to...
And I still think people need a director, you know? I mean, even the writers need a director, so that makes sense to me. Was there room for improv when you were doing your part, or was it totally in stone?
No, I had my monologue down to the last word. Yeah.
And do you work that way? Do you allow people for improv, perhaps?
I do, and in fact, one of the actors, Tim Mullen, when I was shooting his section in the kitchen of Natasha Tall's home, you know, I basically said to him, I think around the 8th take, I said, I want you to just say whatever you want around this section. You know, when you're working, I love working with theater actors. And now the more I'm venturing into film work, I love them even more, because you can pretty much ask anything of a theater actor, and they'll give it to you. Mm-hmm. I mean, the main thing to ask them is to, if anything, you might need to ask them to bring it down a little.
Yeah.
But with Tim, you know, at one point I just said, just say whatever you want. Say whatever you want. And, you know, he didn't stray too far from the script, but I think that helped him. And, you know, you just have to take it with each actor. You have to see, well, what is it they need?
Yeah.
And I felt in, you know, with him, that he needed some more freedom.
Have you done film before? Is this your first venture into film?
I did a very small part in a student film at IC. This was my real first experience. Yeah, so it was interesting. Theater my entire 20 years.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Anne-Marie Cummings and Brenda Albach. We're talking about a film that they worked on together called Easy Prey. It's a film about bullying. I want to know, do you have to tone theater actors down to do film? Because it's such a different
venue. It is. It's so different. But, you know, I think the very nature of having a camera next to an actor and them knowing that they're being filmed, just that alone, not, you know, the physical stage that they're standing on with the lights and with an audience, just that intimate setting alone, I think, brings them down quite a bit.
I have to bring up the National Anti-Bullying Organization, PACERS, that you worked with.
Mm-hmm.
How did you find them? What was the relationship that you had in regard to creating this?
You know, I researched a couple summers ago, I researched tons of organizations all across the United States. And I felt that they were the most comprehensive, and they basically supply a lot of information on their website for people who are being bullied, or for parents, or for teachers. And so I thought that they would be the strongest for me to be aligned with. And, you know, I reached out to them. I told them that I was going to make the short film. I mentioned that I really wanted to really represent the anti-bullying mission. Yeah. You know, I mean, the Reader's Theater, we always put on plays that have strong messages. They're very entertaining, but they also have, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of meat to them. So we may eventually change to a different cause that we're supporting uh-huh. more on the forefront. But for now, I think that Pacers is just, I think everybody should go to their website.
They're educational, and yes. they do events, and they go into classrooms. And
they provide all that information yeah. for yeah. schools yeah. and parents and teachers. And, you know, for young people, if a young person is being bullied and they don't know where to turn,
yeah.
if they go to that website, it's almost like entering a anonymous group of some kind.
Ah, nice.
You really feel supported.
Yeah, yeah. In the course of doing this film, did you meet people who had been bullied? How did this change your lives in regard to doing this? Did it expand your knowledge of this subject, obviously?
I always have compassion for people who are experiencing bullying. I think that it increased my compassion. I think that it's a very hard place for someone to be. I have personally not been bullied. I think when I was in grade school, I, you know, had my pigtails pulled on and,
yeah, yeah.
the, you know, the typical things that young people go through. But, you know, to know that young people will go to school and will be beat up or punched or, you know, kicked, and it's done in private. And when the bully goes to the teacher and explains what's happening to them, and in some cases, the teacher actually looks at that bully and thinks that they're making something up.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, to be mischaracterized when mm-hmm. you need help, to me, is so tragic.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's not just young people, it's adults, too. So,
it seems to be part of our culture. Mm-hmm. How, Brenda, has this changed you? Did it?
I think, you know, just because of the nature of the work that I do, I've always been aware of the issues with bullying. What this film did for me was, just by nature of having to do some research, I didn't realize how bad of a problem it really was.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was on the internet, and I had seen that there, by the time we did this film, I think there were like close to 100 school shootings, a lot of them that we've never even heard of on television because mm-hmm. they were on this, I guess, smaller scale, for lack of a better word.
Not very many victims, perhaps.
Yeah, it's a bigger problem than I think most people realize.
Oh, yeah. And it's coming to the fore, though. I mean, we hear about it much more than we used to. And it especially seems to happen to LGBT people, transgender people.
Yeah.
I mean, I've known a lot of people who've been bullied mm-hmm. in San Francisco in the gay community.
Oh, right.
You know,
yeah.
So you know, you have layers of help being needed. You know, it's not just the bullying, it's also the isolation if somebody in the LGBT community, especially a kid who's afraid
right.
to come out or you know.
Right. And this film does address that uh-huh. issue with a gay athlete.
Yeah.
But you know, I also will say that working on this, especially working with Evan on his piece, because Evan wrote Josh's piece, the
bully. I was going to ask you.
And Effie Johnson wrote your piece, the teacher. But when I was bringing it all together and working a little bit more on Evan's piece, I did do a lot of research, watched watched interviews with bullies who are imprisoned.
Oh, yeah.
And psychopaths. That was scary. But what it did do for me is it certainly made me feel a lot more compassion towards them because they are so messed up, some of these people.
Yeah, and a lot of bullying has to do with fear.
Fear, exactly.
You know, and then also repeating patterns, you know.
Fear and control.
They've been beat up by a father, perhaps, and
right.
they continue the pattern.
Right.
Yeah. You know, when I was growing up, people thought bullying was a rite of passage, right? I mean, people
right.
didn't take
exactly.
it seriously.
Exactly.
They just thought this, you just have to grow up and deal with it. And that's just part of what happens when you live in neighborhoods and communities and go to school. Yeah. So why do you think that's changed now? Why do you think people have... You might be able to speak on that, Brenda.
I don't know. You know, when I think back when I was little, obviously bullying was going on then, but it's gotten to a larger scale nowadays. You know, and then when you think about how families have changed throughout the years, you know, back then we had one parent working, one at home. Mm-hmm. Now it's both parents working. I don't know if it's just a lack of parental guidance, and we don't really address it in school. I mean, I almost think it needs to be a curriculum that is actually offered in school. I don't know. I just don't think we're doing enough to address it.
I don't. And I think that hazing is something that...
People have got to deal with that, because that leads to death.
Leads to death. And I think that maybe that's why it's becoming a little bit more prominent in the media and in our culture, is that, you know, people are starting to stand up and say, my son died because you punched him in some sort of ritual.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I think that these rites of passages have gone too far.
Oh, absolutely.
They've just, and, you know, we are a violent country. And it's being picked up from all over the media.
And
then
the role models in this country. I mean, just look at our government. They're constantly fighting. They sound like they're on the playground half the time. My side's going to win because we're going to get you. You know,
right.
And you can hear bullies
exactly
mimicking that. It's an all-American thing too. I'm an American. I can do whatever I want. You know, without thinking about morality, anybody's feelings, empathy. It is like a psychopath. Or a sociopath, perhaps.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure Obama is bullied on a daily basis.
Oh, I know he is. I'm sure he is. Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about Josh, though. You said Evan wrote the part. How much were you involved in developing that part? And that must have been a composite.
It was interesting. It did, you know, the pieces that Effie and Evan wrote, they took a life. They were really strong on their own. But when I needed to bring them in to work as a whole for the film, they needed quite a bit of shaping.
Mm.
But the real heart of it, the meat of it, was there in Evan's piece. And it was brutal. You know, when I first read it, it was very mean. I kept that, and I think what shifted and changed was primarily some more of the references so that it tied in with the other pieces, mm-hmm. and more of a story, because he does tell a story.
Yeah, and it has to be in a condensed way, right?
Yes.
I mean, a real person's story could go on for days.
But, you know, the character Josh, he tells a story right before he takes the action.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what helped me greatly in the process of working with Evan's piece was, at the time that I was working on it, was when the Santa Barbara shooting happened.
Oh, yeah.
And that young man left us this video of him sitting in the car very calmly talking.
Yeah.
And actually, not only did that help me as the director working with Fo Long, but it helped me in shaping up that piece, because I had to get into the mind of this young man who was like, what was he thinking as he was sitting in that car right before taking the action that he did? You know, I mean, it's very difficult. And I never wanted to work on that piece too long.
Yeah,
because it was very disturbing for me.
You know, as much as I couldn't stand the Josh character, I felt empathy for him.
But it's
because, you know, I've been around, I suppose, and I've met people who I assumed he'd been abused. And then was acting out partially from that angle.
I think you're right. And that comes up in his friend's monologue, Carl.
Yeah.
That was the only actor who I shot who was not from the area. He's based in New York City, Ian Witt. But I shot his piece, don't want to give the whole thing away, but I did shoot his piece over Skype.
That was an interesting way of designing that. I thought that was a really interesting way of doing it.
It was primarily because he was in New York City and timing, and I just couldn't get over there. But his character does talk about Josh, the bully, his father.
Yeah, and it's interesting the way you filmed that. It was almost in black and white. Or was it in black and white? I can't remember.
I don't know if too many people film over Skype, but it was, I kept in all the the times when the voice would lag behind. I didn't try and fix that with Marilyn in the editing process, and I kept the sort of screen.
That was great. I loved that. Awesome. I thought it was very dramatic.
Oh, good.
I thought it was really interesting.
Thanks.
Now, did you consult with anybody who's actually dealt with bullies and dealt with victims of bullying in regard to the authenticity of some of these monologues? Psychologists, anybody?
No, I didn't. And I didn't do that because we weren't trying to create a documentary,
per se.
Right. You might have read the review that Kina Liu gave us, but she referred to it as the Laramie Project of school shootings. Now, I would say that if anything, I thought that was pretty accurate because this was fiction based on.
Because Laramie was not fiction, but it was based on.
Right. It was based on an actual.
So
I wanted to, I just trust myself and I trusted the other writers. I felt that we were depicting these characters in a very real way and not overthinking it.
Yeah. See, that would be the problem, too. You'd turn it into a clinical film.
Oh,
if you had too many consultations.
Right, too many cooks in the kitchen would make it, you know, who knows what.
It would have muddied the waters, I think.
Right.
We're going to run out of time soon. Quickly tell us a little bit about the music.
Oh, absolutely.
It's great. The music's great.
Well, I have to say that I was ready to give up on this project at one point because there were, you know, I'm not going to go into the details, but there were some people who didn't want to, you know, support it. But Sage Francis, Wixon Music Publishing, Epitaph Records, they all came behind me. Sage Francis is an amazing, one of the very well-known hip-hop rap artists in the United States. And he said, why don't you use my song, The Best of Times?
Yeah.
And I want you to use it at no cost. And so getting all the permissions from also Jan Tiersen, the French composer from Amelie, the film, he created the composition in The Best of Times. Getting his permission really empowered me in the process. And then Hank Roberts brought his music on board, and Hank is local. And
It was beautiful. The soundtrack's great, and that the way it ends with that beautiful song is just wonderful. We're almost out of time. Give us some dates when this is going to show, websites.
Right. So people can learn more at The Readers Theater, spelled R-E at the end, .com. And it's October 1st at 7 p.m. at Cinemopolis. It is free for the community. So I would recommend that parents come with children so that you can have a conversation afterwards. You will be able to meet some of the cast and myself and have a conversation also with the writers in the lobby at Cinemopolis.
I would think you'd want to have a Q&A afterwards. And you are going to be showing this in schools. Dates still being planned. And
for anyone, I know New Roots has organized a school group to, we are still offering it for free for schools, but you do need to pay the rental fee at Cinemopolis. It will be on our website for a year afterwards, but, you know, website is a website. Yeah. If you want a school group to have a conversation about bullying, I recommend that you contact us through our website, thereaderstheater@gmail.com.
Great. Well, Anne-Marie Cummings and Brenda Albrock, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Again, the film is called Easy Prey. Go out and see it whenever you get a chance here in the community. It will be roving around. Very important film. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.